because back in the 80s, it got crazy. Welcome back to the program. 803-0930 is the number to call. We've got Jim Heaney on from investigativepost.org. We left off, and we were talking about OTB. But, Joe, first I want to play some sound from just give me a little bit about just give me some random stuff from this morning. Mayor Byron Brown was on with Brian and Susan, a new morning. Here was what Byron Brown had to say.
The thing to know is that there is a First Amendment in our country. People do not have to have a permit to exercise their First Amendment free speech rights. They don't have to have a permit to protest.
You know, earlier he'd mentioned that, you know, it's the time to move away from protest and go more into policy, that we need policy. And he actually touted the policies that he has headed in the Buffalo Police Department to make changes. What do you take from that, Jim?
Incredibly empty rhetoric. Here's a guy who's been mayor for, I don't know, maybe 14 years. The protests really peaked 2-3 months ago, and there's been very little out of this mayor. And you know, in our form of government here in the city, policy is driven by the mayor's office. The mayor has made some changes in police department policy. I would consider them to be modest. Nothing, you know, hugely significant, but there have been changes. But policy is the job of the mayor to put forward. And this mayor has put, in terms of dealing with the larger issues of police reform, the larger issues of poverty and violence, this mayor in his time in office has put forward almost nothing. So for him to now say, oh, let's move beyond protest, let's start doing policy, well, Byron, where have you been all these years? You've been nowhere. It's just, to me, it's very maddening to hear a guy who talks the talk and doesn't walk the walk when it comes to policy.
No, let me ask
right.
You.
We need policy. You know, when are we going to see something of substance?
Now, let me ask you the existential question. Is what's happening across the United States, what's happening in Buffalo, and there's a rally projected for tomorrow, and many people in North Buffalo are saying, hey, could you watch my kids? Take them to the South Towns. I don't want to be home. We were talking in the break where businesses were saying, you know, I'm losing business because of this protest. Is this, do we have a race issue in the United States?
David, that's people who are afraid in their home. I live in North Buffalo. There's been zero violence. If people are afraid of their own shadows, then they're afraid of their own
shadows.
Well,
I don't think it's saying they're afraid.
But this notion...
But is it fair to say...
But this notion that these protests have presented no real danger to people in their homes. They've presented no danger to businesses.
Right. But what I'm saying... But hold on, Jim. To be fair, that's like saying the tiger in the street is relatively safe and everything's okay. They're watching videos of Portland and Seattle every single day. That's what the media is putting out there.
Well, that's Portland and that's Seattle.
But you can understand how...
North Buffalo.
But you can understand that if people feel insecure today, that both sides are doing a great job of fomenting that insecurity. So my question to you is this a race problem in the United States, or is it a class problem? You mentioned poverty. It's the first time I've ever heard poverty coming up with anything having to do with African Americans in the United States. Nobody's talking about education and poverty. We're talking about only police reform. And you're saying maybe this is a class issue.
I don't think... If you haven't heard poverty and education, I don't think you've been paying real close attention to what Black Lives Matters movement has been discussing. I mean, they've got a pretty detailed agenda of changes they want to
see. But it's
poverty,
also...
I mean, poverty is you know, very much, you know, in answer to your question, David, I think it's class, but I think it's definitely race as well. I mean, there's no... I don't think there's any question that it's both.
So when you talk about the platform for Black Lives Matter, and this is always the problem you get with unions, where you know, a teacher's union will have a strike, they'll put out a platform, and there always seems to be issues in that platform that really aren't in the subject matter expertise of teachers. You know, teachers will have a statement about green energy, or you'll hear auto workers talking about, you know, something having to do with a nuanced approach to healthcare that seems to be politically motivated. The NRA gets involved in issues they have no business being in. They're the NRA. I mean, what they're talking about, you know, school reform and school security, and that really isn't in the confines of what the NRA allegedly in their mission statement. So everyone likes to expand their subject matter expertise. I totally understand that. But when it comes to the Black Lives Matter platform, what is it that primarily that they're asking for that can be achieved legislatively? Because there's also things about green energy in there, and they're all over the place with their scope and their platform. But what is it that you think could be done legislatively if you were running the world?
Well, how about I reframe the question? What could be done legislatively in Buffalo, New York?
Okay, let's start there.
You know, there can be all sorts of reform. And I'll tell you what, Jeff Kelly did a piece we published maybe a month and a half ago that was a deep dive on the labor contract between the city and the Police Benevolent Association. And what Jeff found were some pretty structural problems within that contract. It's very difficult to discipline cops for misconduct. Promotions of all sorts are dictated not by qualifications or competency, but by seniority. So, you know, I would argue if you're serious about police reform in Buffalo, then you've got to be serious about contract negotiations that are ongoing right now between the city and the PBA to start to get at the structural problems in that contract that makes it that discourages professional policing. That's the kind and you know, one of the things Jeff, you know, also found out in his reporting is that these are issues that the Brown administration, through I think three previous contract negotiations, never attempted to rectify. So again, the mayor's talking about policy. Well, why don't you seriously negotiate changes to the police contract that restores the power to the police commissioner to discipline bad cops and allows the police commissioner to promote police based on competency and not seniority? And that's the kind of stuff that upsets me when I hear the mayor talking about policy, because mayor's had plenty of opportunities when it comes to policy to do things to address the problems that are being protested in the streets. Chosen not to.
Let me ask you, you know, if you took the top three stories in Buffalo right now, you know, the Grand Island story got a lot of press with Amazon. We're talking about Black Lives Matter, police reform, and schools and COVID, going back to schools. When you take a step back and look at 2020 compared to 1912, in the turn of the century, of the 20th century.
How back then?
Well, no, but I'm saying that if you go back to the early part of the, you know, the Gilded Age, the post-industrial revolution, unions were built a class of American. And the middle class in America was, you couldn't compare the middle class to European countries. It was a completely new invention that workers had rights, and that even if you were an immigrant, you were going to be a citizen, and you were also going to have validation and dignity with a job, and that job had a responsibility to treat you as a human. This is an important part of American history. But when you look at today, all of the major issues that we're having are really union issues. They're not the police department and the city or police department not wanting to serve or not having the means to serve, or the Buffalo schools system doesn't care about children. It's always there has to be compromises because this union is so powerful. It's so strong. We can't control it. So we're going to have to start to, you know, basically play to them. This is why you can't fire cops. This is why you can't fire bad teachers. Do unions have too much power in 2020?
Well, I think if you're talking about labor unions in terms of the private sector, no, they don't. Well, first of all, I would insist that all of our problems are somehow rooted in labor unions. I think that's, you know, COVID-19 has with labor unions.
Well, it's no, but in the sense, no, hold on, though. In the sense that teachers don't want to go back into the school system, and there is a movement, there's resistance now by teachers that are saying, you're going to dictate to our, who cares what the parents say? Who cares what the superintendent says? We have a vote too. It's our workplace. They do have a lot of power in how we go back to school because of COVID.
Oh, well, they do. But I, you know, I'm a former labor negotiator. I was a reporter at the Buffalo News for 25 years. I negotiated 8 contracts on behalf of the Buffalo Newspaper Guild. So I have some labor sympathies. And I think it gives me a perspective, too, because when it comes to both the PBA and the Buffalo in the BTF, the teachers union, what you have to keep in mind is that unions are in the job of representing their members and the interests of their members. So for as much as like people want to hate on Phil Remore, for example, Phil's doing his job. That's his job. Much like a defense lawyer. You may hate the defense lawyer who's representing somebody who's on trial for some heinous crime.
Right. It's not Johnny Cochran's fault. That, yeah. Johnny Cochran's.
And the problem isn't the unions, it's the lack of, and let's talk about government, it's the lack of people in government to adequately represent the people who they're responsible for, which is the public, which is the taxpayer. You know, the contract with the PBA that I just mentioned, the seniority and the discipline and all that stuff, the unions didn't dictate that. They negotiated that. Jimmy Griffin and other mayors agreed to that. They gave away the store. It's not the PBA's fault. It's the city's fault. It's the council's fault for approving that. The same with school teachers in the BTF. The Board of Education agreed to that. I heard stories from Phil Remore when I used to cover the schools for the Buffalo News about some of the situations, like, for example, when he got health insurance for future retired teachers. The school district gave that to them. They negotiated that. The failure wasn't on Phil Remore's part. It was on the part of the president, the school board, and the superintendent. What we need to deal with public unions is we need effective representation by our elected officials to look out for our interests. And that frequently doesn't happen.